Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Melbourne City Council Future Melbourne Committee number 82. On Tuesday, the 4th of August, we are opening our meeting at 5:30 p.m. I welcome councillors, management and members of the public. Thank you for attending this evening for what is a momentous occasion. It is the first time in the 170-year history of the City of Melbourne that we are holding our meeting virtually with all councillors, members of staff and members of the public attending via technology. We are very grateful to our team for making this happen because with stage four restrictions, we wanted to make sure that we are doing our best to minimise movement and adhere to the restrictions. No matter what challenges we face as a council and as a city, we want to ensure that we remain focused on our community. And that's why we are delighted that we can continue with our council meeting this evening to ensure that council business continues and we can remain focused on issues that are important to our local residents and businesses. We respectfully acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we are gathered, the Boonwurrung and the Woiwurrung Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and pay our respects to their elders past and present. They are the traditional owners of the land on which the City of Melbourne is located, and I acknowledge that there will be traditional owners, elders past and present, in the various locations where our councillors, management and members of the public are beaming in from this evening. But for the Kulin Nation, we are proud that Melbourne remains an important meeting place for social, educational, sporting and cultural events. Today we are proud to say that Melbourne is a significant gathering place for all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. As part of our efforts to contain the spread of COVID-19 and pursuant to the provisions of sections 394 and 395 of the Local Government Act 2020, council and committee meetings are being held virtually until further notice. During the period 1 May 2020 to 1 November 2020, councils do not need to provide for members of the public to physically attend meetings. Providing public access via live streaming satisfies the public attendance test for the prescribed period. This meeting is being streamed live, and a video and audio recording will be published on the council's website by close of business tomorrow. The unconfirmed minutes of this meeting will also be available from the City of Melbourne's website as soon as practicable. I request everyone please still to look at their mobile phones, make sure they are turned off or to silent. And of course, we have mute buttons to help with some of that incidental noise this evening as well. The agenda this evening comprises five reports from management and one item of general business. Pleased to say that there are no apologies that have been received. I advise members of the committee and the public that where the committee makes a decision on the basis of fewer than six members voting in favour of it, the decision may be referred by a councillor to council for decision. Councillors, we're up to conflicts of interest, and please note that if you have either a direct or an indirect interest as defined in the Local Government Act 1989 in relation to a matter to be considered by committee this evening, please disclose the type and nature of your interest prior to consideration of that item. We are up to agenda item three, which is confirmation of minutes of the previous meeting. I'm calling on a councillor to move a resolution adopting the minutes of open meeting number 81 held on Tuesday, 21 July 2020. Councillor Riley, thank you very much for getting us going on this evening. And Councillor Leppett, thank you for seconding the motion. I'm now going to put the motion to the vote. Councillors, all those in favour, please raise your hand. And as I look across the screens, I can see everyone's hands up. It's unanimous, and I can declare the motion carried, our first virtually voted on motion. So well done, everyone. It's working. Councillors, are there any matters arising from the minutes that you would like to discuss at this time? None, thank you. Well, I'd like to note that the following submissions have been received in accordance with the Council's Meeting Procedures Code in relation to Agenda Item 6.1, which is Melbourne Planning Scheme Amendments C386 and C387, Hoddle Grid Heritage Review. We've had requests to speak from Braden Allen and Rowan Storey. And we've received 22 items of correspondence in relation to this matter. In relation to Agenda Item 6.3, Endorsement of Draft Reconciliation Action Plan 2020 to 2023 for Community Consultation, we've had a request to speak from Chris Thrum and an item of correspondence from Chris Thrum. In relation to Agenda Item 6.4, Endorsement of the Concept Design Plans and Project Update for the Redevelopment of the Western Pavilion in Royal Park, we've had a request to speak from Dean Patch, Brunswick Hockey Club, and items of correspondence from Kate Oddy, Friends of Royal Park, Dean Patch and from the Brunswick Hockey Club, and Stephen Main. In relation to Agenda Item 6.5, Supporting Small Businesses Through the Environmental Upgrade Agreement Legislation and Model, we've had an item of correspondence from Scott Boxgay. In relation to Agenda Item 7.1, Notice of Motion, Councillor Susan Riley, publication, the year that was 2020, to record COVID-19 crisis and impact on the City of Melbourne. We've had an item of correspondence from Chris Thrum. I advise submitters that you will be invited to address the committee at the time the relevant agenda item is being considered. You will have 3 minutes to address the committee. It is the intention of the committee to adhere to the timeframes this evening. And to assist you, there's a screen that you should be able to see that has a countdown clock, you will hear a ringing when you have 1 minute left and a ringing at the end of the 3 minutes. And if you can just keep an eye on the countdown clock or listen out, then that would be terrific if you can finalise your presentation at the end of the 3 minutes. Thank you very much. Agenda item 5 this evening is public questions, and in accordance with the Council's Meeting Procedures Code, a 15-minute period is provided at the start and at the end of each meeting for members of the public to ask questions. To enable the public to continue to participate in future Melbourne Committee meetings, members of the public can either submit a question in writing or they can register to ask a question via our live audio link. I'm now going to invite Stephen Main, who has registered to ask a question. We've had 3 public questions received, 2 of which are going to be asked via our audio link, and 1 of which is going to be, which was a written question. Let me say that again. 3 public questions have been received, 2 of which will be asked via our audio link. 1 is written. I was distracted because I noticed that Councillor Rees is wearing a tuxedo for the occasion. So thank you very much. I'm now going over to you, Stephen Main. You've had plenty of time to prepare, we look forward to receiving your question. Thank you.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. My one oral question tonight is to congratulate the council for moving to a fully online model. I think other councils have done this earlier. And I'm just interested as to the cost saving from moving to this model rather than hiring camera crews and setting up the chamber and all the infrastructure that comes with that. So how much are the ratepayers saving roughly per meeting by moving to a fully Zoom model as opposed to the hybrid model you were running before with partial Zoom and partial traditional live streaming of a physical meeting?
Okay, I'm looking at our CEO and I'm wondering, Justin, would you like to answer this now if you have the information, or would you like to take it on notice?
Yeah, look, Lord Mayor, we don't have that information in terms of the cost of this Zoom versus running Zoom, because we partly run Zoom in the chamber, as you know. But happy to take the question on notice and come back to Stephen Mayne in due course.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Good. Thanks, Stephen, for your question. And I'm now going to go to Chris Thrum for your question, Chris.
Lord Mayor, thank you. It's Beck here from Council Business. I've not been able to get Chris online. I will continue trying and hopefully he'll be with us later in the meeting, and perhaps during our second question time we can hear from Chris.
Good idea, Beck. Thank you for that. Well, we did receive one written public question. I note that in reading out this question, I'm reading it verbatim and I'm not attesting at all to its veracity or factual nature of any statements made. The question was received from Stephen Mayne and it says, given that the enterprise agreement is the biggest single contract that the City of Melbourne enters into and that councillors have no input into it besides approving the budget for staff expenditure, will the CEO undertake not to enter into a new four-year agreement costing ratepayers over $1 billion in the final weeks of the current council so that the new council can be fully briefed on council's impaired post-COVID budget position before such a long-term commitment is made? Justin, over to you for a response, please.
Thanks, Lord Mayor, and thanks for your question, Stephen. Look, we're currently back at the negotiating table, just to let you know that we were about to put our enterprise agreement to a vote at the time that COVID first impacted, so we put our enterprise agreement deliberately on hold. We are now back at the negotiating table, where we're looking for where we have at the moment on the table a 0% increase. Look, I don't have, I'm not at this stage in a position to give further undertakings in relation to the enterprise agreement. But I can confirm, and I think all councillors are aware of this, we're fully aware of council's budget position and the need to contain costs. The new council, when they are formed, will be fully briefed on council's post-COVID budget position, including the status of the enterprise agreement. But again, I'll just repeat, we are back at the negotiating table in good faith. Thanks, Lord Mayor.
Thank you, Justin. We're up to item six on the agenda, which is reports from management. I'm calling on Councillor Leppert to assume the role of chair of the meeting in relation to the planning heritage portfolio. Thank you, Councillor Leppert.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. There are two reports from management for consideration under the planning portfolio today under the heritage subsection. The first is agenda item 6.1, Melbourne Planning Scheme Amendments C386 and C387, Hoddle Grid Heritage Review. I believe there are a number of councillors who have indicated they may have a conflict of interests, and we need to take them one at a time so that we can put each councillor on Zoom into the waiting room. And on that basis, I'll now pause and wait for conflicts. Councillor Pinder.
Chair, I declare a conflict of interest to this item.
Okay. Councillor Riley? You're on mute, Councillor Riley.
Councillor Riley, we need you to go off mute, please. Thank you.
While we're waiting for Councillor Riley, that's
right.
Oh, no, here we are. Councillor Riley, thank you.
Okay, sorry about that. I'm declaring an indirect conflict due to having received an election campaign donation, and also a direct conflict owning a property which is listed. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Riley, for declaring the conflict in accordance with how we're meant to do it. Councillor Oak.
Thank you, Chair. I declare an indirect conflict of interest for Section 78C on the basis that a family member of a fellow candidate in the 2016 election donated to a campaign, and he lives in a building proposed as part of the Heritage Overlay.
Thank you, Councillor Oak. Deputy Lord Mayor.
Thanks, Chair. I'll declare an indirect conflict under 78C of the Act for receipt of a campaign donation to impacted property owners.
Thank you, Councillor Louis.
Thank you, Chair. I also would like to declare a conflict due to Section 78C, due to a receipt of a people gift being a donation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Louis. Councillor Lee, oh no, sorry, beg your pardon, Councillor Rees.
Thank you, Councillor Leppard. I also need to declare a indirect conflict of interest under Section 78C due to the receipt of a campaign donation.
Thank you, Councillor Rees. Councillor Watts.
I too would declare a conflict of interest, an indirect conflict of interest. A person who was a fellow member of my campaign team has contributed to the campaign funds, and they have a property in the city.
Thank you, Councillor Watts. I too will declare an indirect conflict of interest. Like Councillor Oak, one of our fellow candidates in 2016 has a family member who donated to our campaign and lives in a property proposed for a heritage overlay. We will now lose quorum, and on that basis, I'll hand over to Justin Hanney, CEO, to make a statement on how this matter will proceed. But I'll ask him to wait for me to be moved to the waiting room as well before he starts that. Thank you.
Okay, just confirming if I can, Councillor Leppard is in the waiting room. So, look, due to the number of councillors that you have just seen that have declared a conflict of interest in this matter, the required quorum for this meeting has been lost, and therefore the meeting has lapsed. A loss of quorum means this matter cannot be considered at this meeting, nor at a future meeting, given the number of councillors who have now declared their conflict of interest or a conflict of interest. As there's no constituted meeting, we cannot hear verbal submissions. And on behalf of the City of Melbourne, I apologise to submitters who have registered to speak tonight. I can assure you that all written responses have been reviewed and have been considered. I'll ask Council's General Manager of Strategy, Planning and Climate Change, Ms. Alison Layton, to explain what will happen next in regards to this agenda item. Alison, if you're there, please.
Thank you, CEO. As a result of the loss of quorum for this item, Hoddle Grid Heritage Review, I will be making the decision under delegation. I intend to make my decision in accordance with the management recommendation printed in the agenda papers. For transparency with our community, tomorrow I will publish the details of my decision on the Hoddle Grid Heritage Review pages on our Participate Melbourne website. Thank you, CEO.
Okay, thanks, Alison. Look, I think now we can now let the councillors who declared a conflict of interest, if they can return to the meeting, and the meeting will resume. Councillor Leppard, if you are there, I'm now handing back the meeting to you. You're on mute, Councillor Leppard.
Councillor Leppard, you've been reinstated as a co-host and you should now have control of your volume.
No, Councillor Leppard has not. We appear to have lost him. So if everyone can just hold on a moment.
All right, I now have been given access and I'll just wait to make sure I can see everything. I can. Everyone's been returned. Thank you very much. Sorry, that just took a little bit of a delay, but thank you very much, CEO. And we're now up to agenda item 6.2, which is the Heritage Design Guide and Heritage Owner's Guide. final endorsement following targeted stakeholder engagement. Would councillors like a presentation on this matter? Can I see a show of hands if the answer is yes? No, on that basis, I will move the motion in the form of the recommendation from management, and I call on a councillor to second that motion, please. Thank you very much, Councillor Rees. This is a wonderful piece of work. I'm incredibly grateful to the team for putting this together. This has been out for...
Sorry, Chair, I'm just going to interrupt for a moment. I think we've lost one of the councillors. I'm just going to have a quick count. One, two, three, four... 5, 6, there we are. Councillor Watts is coming back in.
I counted 11, but I was possibly counting the CEO. So
yes, I have done that too today.
To you, all councillors, and to Councillor Watts. I'll just pause while we make sure she can connect. Welcome back, Councillor Watts. Can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
All right.
Thank you.
We'll persevere on that basis. That's not the most brilliant connection, but I think we have enough to continue with, so we'll give it a go. Thanks, everyone. I have moved the motion in the form of the recommendation from management, and Councillor Rees has seconded the motion. We are now quorate with a full attendance, and we will continue the meeting. Thank you, Councillor Watts and all councillors. As I was saying, this is a really exciting piece of work. It's been out for consultation, and it has come back with a series of changes which are transparently documented up the front of the report, and I thank officers for presenting it to us in this way. The most exciting news here, though, is that Amendment C258, which changes... Sorry, I'll just pause to see. We need to hear from Councillor Watts. It might either be a point of order or a clarification with the connection. So I'm just going to pause again and see if we need to deal with a matter of procedure.
It appears it's Beck here from Council Business. It appears that Councillor Watts has dialed in from two devices or accounts.
I might propose that we suspend the meeting for 2 minutes. Is that the most logical thing to do at this point in time while someone makes a call through to Councillor Watts?
Yeah, look, it's Justin Henney here, Councillor Leppard. I think that's a good suggestion. If we suspend for 2 minutes, and I will call Councillor Watts now.
Thank you. I can do a short suspension without a motion, I believe. Is that correct? Beck, do you have a Marla or a Keith next to you, or should I take a vote just to
I'm
be sure?
I'm going to unmute Keith and see if he
Thank
can
you, Keith.
Enlighten us. Marlo is unavailable this evening, unfortunately.
Councillors, it's Keith Williamson. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you, Keith. 5:56 p.m. I take the Lord Mayor's seconder. I now put that to a vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. I take that as unanimous. I note that Councillor Watts cannot hear us, so I'm taking her as a non-attendee at this point in time. The meeting is suspended until 5:56 p.m. Thank you. Okay, it's now 4 to 6, so count me in, all good. Beck, you give me the okay.
Thank you. I'm going to handball that one to Josh.
Good to go, thank you.
All right, the meeting recommences at 4 minutes to 6. Thank you, everyone. Hopefully those technical issues are now behind us. We are in the middle of a debate at agenda item 6.2. A motion has been moved and seconded as it appears on the screen. As mover, I had commenced the debate and I will now continue. I was just saying that Amendment C258 has been gazetted since we put these two documents out for consultation with the sector. And that is a tremendously exciting thing. These are the new heritage policies for inside and outside the central city, now in the Melbourne Planning Scheme. And the thousands and thousands of buildings and places and objects that are recognised as places of local significance in the Melbourne Planning Scheme have had their gradings changed from the old A to E system to the new significant contributory, non-contributory system, which reflects contemporary practice. And this is a wholesale upgrade of our policies, which allows us now to get on with the heritage reviews like the HODL Grid Heritage Review that we saw in the previous agenda item, but a raft of others as well. And these new heritage policies are much, much stronger and more comprehensive than the policies that came before them, but they're still in planning speak. And the need to translate these policies into truly accessible and illustrative interpretations was strong, and I think these documents are absolutely extraordinary. The way the policies have been translated into how we demolish or alter or add to heritage buildings is incredibly clear. It's entirely consistent with our new heritage policies, and the work done by the Office of Victorian Government Architect, by the heritage groups that we've consulted with, by the National Trust and others, and everyone who's submitted during the last few months of work. I commend everyone who has been involved in that, but especially our heritage team at the City of Melbourne who has put this together. I think these are extraordinary documents. So I couldn't speak highly enough of this motion, and I commend these documents, and I encourage all owners of heritage properties to engage with them after they are adopted, which I very much hope they are tonight. Councillor Rees. We may have lost Councillor Rees. I'm just going to ask.
No, Councillor Rees is here. Councillor Rees was just unmuting Councillor Leppard. Look, I fully agree with your words, Councillor Leppard, and wholeheartedly support the motion that is before Council. Look, this is a terrific bit of work. It's this design guide, heritage design guide, is very useful, it's very accessible. Even a mug like me who's had a go at renovating a heritage home could make sense of it. And so I hope that many more Melburnians who do find themselves undertaking a development in a heritage setting can call upon this very useful guide so that they get it right and we can continue to preserve and enhance the heritage fabric of this city, which is so special to us, so important to us, and so distinctive about Melbourne, something that sets Melbourne apart. Can I also make the point that I'm aware that this heritage booklet, and it does exist in a booklet form at the moment, is also going to be translated into an online format so that people can visit the City of Melbourne website and very easily access all the information that is available in the booklet and do so in an online friendly way. And again, this is all about making heritage sensitive development as easy as possible to do in this city. Thank you, Councillor Leppard.
Thank you, Councillor Rees. Would other councillors like to contribute to the debate? No? Councillor Watts has just left the room. Lord Mayor, thank you.
Sorry, I just want to make sure Councillor Watts is with us. Thank you, and thanks to the team and everyone that's participated in fine-tuning the heritage design and owner's guides. I think I agree with the comments that have been made already. I'm really happy to support this motion and the good work that has been done. I think often when the word heritage is said, it tends to polarise certain parts of our community and stakeholders, and I think these guides really show that heritage doesn't mean that properties can't be enhanced or developed. In fact, these guides are about helping and ensuring that we can retain the wonderful character of our city and the many stories and elements that make our city so special, whilst at the same time ensuring that it's a city that is set up for the future, welcoming more people and more activity. And we can do that together well when we follow the thoughtful sort of work and direction that's contained in the design and owner guides It'll bring clarity, I think a sigh of relief for many people, and a good sense of engagement as we move forward together. So thank you very much, and I'm happy to support.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Any further contributions to the debate? Councillor Oak.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to acknowledge the team that has worked so hard on this, Emma Appleton and Tanya Wolkenberg and others, obviously. I remember when we put it out for consultation in February, we all spoke quite eloquently and in, you know, furious agreement how fabulous it was. And it's only but come back even better after their targeted stakeholder consultation. In spite of COVID and not being able to do this face-to-face, they've certainly been able to provide an opportunity for people to feedback. And you can see the detailed response in the report before us tonight. So I agree with what others have said. It's really accessible. It's really clear. Every section, every different guide, every section of the guide really makes it clear as to what you should or shouldn't do. And so there really isn't any excuse anymore when we receive, heritage applications for alterations or demolition or whatever for heritage listed or heritage impacted properties within the City of Melbourne. That really should be fairly easy to I say that lightly, but, it should be at least the first step should be easy to understand where to go to next. So thank you to the team.
Thank you, Councillor Oak. And the team, any further contributions to the debate? No. I will close the debate without speaking, and so I'll put the motion to the vote now. All those in favour, please raise your hands. I'll ask if Councillor Louis, which way he's voting. Yes, I'll declare that vote carried unanimously. Thank you, colleagues. I'll now hand over to Councillor Frances Gilley, who will chair the meeting in relation to the Aboriginal City Portfolio. Thank you, Councillor Frances Gilley.
Thank you, Councillor Leppard. There is one report from management for consideration under the Aboriginal City Portfolio, Agenda Item 6.3, Endorsement of Draft Reconciliation Action Plan 2020 to 2023 for community consultation. I'm going to ask Hans Buchland, who is the team leader of Aboriginal Melbourne, for a short presentation. Hans, are you there?
If you just bear with me a moment, I will find him amidst our participants and unmute him.
Thank you.
Hans.
Thank you very much, Councillor. Firstly, I'd mention that I'm also on traditional land where I currently reside. I'm on the Wurundjeri land, so I'd like to pay my personal respects to their elders past, present and also emerging. And it's with great pleasure as the inaugural director of Aboriginal Melbourne that I commend this particular document to comms and for consultation, community consultation. One thing with regards to a reconciliation action plan, the City of Melbourne is not new to a reconciliation action plan. In fact, back in 2006, Council was the first local government to introduce a reconciliation action plan. So what we're doing is we're building on momentum, part of what we call our reconciliation journey. And when you consider our current fifth iteration of our draft Innovate RAP, as I mentioned, we've had four RAPs previously. The last one was from 2015 to 2018. So it's been 2 years for us to come now with this new Innovate Reconciliation Action Plan for 2020-2023. And one of the things is with regards to this particular RAP, it follows the framework of Reconciliation Australia. So there's a framework where we have to have certain pillars. But one thing that's new to this particular RAP is the introduction of a new pillar, which is truth-telling. And one thing, when we appreciate the history of Australia, we have a vibrant history, a long history, but also Aboriginal history who have contributed to our great nation. And one of the things, a part of truth-telling, is to engage with the Aboriginal community and give their perspective on our history, what makes Melbourne great. So that's one particular aspect of this RAP, which is unique to Reconciliation Australia's framework. So I commend the boldness and inspiration that the City of Melbourne is heading down a particular path along this reconciliation journey. And one thing too, I'd like to also commend my staff, just thinking about their their tirelessness and their enthusiasm and wanting to continue the legacy that we've built on since 2006. Because one thing with regards to this Reconciliation Action Plan, it is a living document. As people may or may not be aware, part of Reconciliation Australia, there's a trajectory that the City of Melbourne has put itself on. The first type of draft wrap that the Reconciliation Australia has is what they call a reflect wrap. And we're in the second phase, they call it innovate wrap. Then the next phase is a stretch wrap. And then you aspire to the elevate wrap, all with different frameworks, KPIs, a part of that. And so this innovate wrap, which I'm commending to Council for general community consultation, will put us on that trajectory for a elevate wrap. Just a part of this process, a part of what we're doing. So today we're with FMC looking at this draft innovate wrap, but on the 7th of August, we're hoping that it'll go live to the general public. It'll go out for public consultation for 4 weeks until the 4th of September. And in that time, there'll be an Aboriginal community consultation forum. So certain organisations, individuals will be specifically targeted on the 19th of August. And then following which, after general public consultation, will come back to council meeting on the 24th of November, taking into consideration all the points that community has, says both Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal people. So without further ado, I'd like to commend the draft Innovate Wrap 2020 to 2023 for public consultation. Thank you.
Thank you, Hans. And I would now like to call on Chris Thrum, if he has arrived, who requests the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter and to speak for no more than 3 minutes. Chris there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Great, Chris. Welcome. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Yeah, I'd like to echo the sentiments and thoughts of the previous speaker. It's a tremendous draft that's been put forward, and I'm sure we're anticipating like a lot of tremendous consultation and community feedback in regards to the draft. City of Melbourne's to be commended for its rapid reconciliation action plan. And I think it sows a lot of positive seeds into the community. As was previously pointed out by the previous speaker, truth-telling has been brought up in regards to the reconciliation action plan. And I think it's important in the future that there is truth-telling and reconciliation to further the process of understanding the full context of the tribes of the Kulin Nation. Of course, the meeting is being held on Wurundjeri country, and also we have across the river, Boonwurrung country. I think it's important to look at the context of the history of the Kulin Nation and also European settlement. And I think one important thing is the Festival of Ballat Nowran that's held every summer on Australia Day, the 26th of January, brings forth together many members of different tribes from around the Victoria and Australia. And over the years, we've seen it develop like a much more positive, much more vibrant sort of energetic festival to celebrate the First Nations culture. So in conclusion, I again commend the officers and management of the City of Melbourne for their visionary reconciliation action plan as they elevate through the echelons and stages of furthering a reconciliation. Thank the Lord Mayor, Deputy Lord Mayor and councillors too for their time and effort in regards to this matter as well. And I urge and recommend that the councillors approve this draft and that we look forward to members of the community to discuss and present this wrap.
Thank you, Chris. Beautifully spoken, as always, and very grateful for your participation. I will move the motion that's on our screen, and I call for a seconder of the motion. Thank you, Councillor Oak, who's the Deputy of the Aboriginal Portfolio. So, as a mover, I'll speak to the motion. I think, first of all, Hans and team, thank you for your leadership. This is a great document. It speaks for itself. It's pretty clear. I think what is important that it is the first time that including INARAP is truth-telling. And I think if there's anything I've learnt, I think in really as the chair of the portfolio for the last 3.5 years, is that it is difficult to tell the truth about our history, and we don't like it. And I want to say a couple of sorries, and I'm already shaking at the thought of saying it. I'm shaking because I'm frightened that my colleagues might go, oh God, here we go again, or I'm frightened that people will think that that I'm going to get it wrong. I'm frightened that Aboriginal people will think I'm not honouring the journey. It is really difficult. And I think if we are to have meaningful reconciliation, if we are to have a RAP that really changes the city, that actually grabs hold of this extraordinary continuous culture, this tens of thousands of years culture, and puts it at the heart of the city, I think this is an important part. I will not be standing for election again. I stood for election to support an Aboriginal voice on council. I did that because when I arrived in Australia 20 years ago, my first job was in juvenile justice, and I met lots of Aboriginal young people in Parkville prison. And my next job was then running the Brotherhood of St. Lawrence, where in my first days, because our job was to support the poorest people in Australia, I asked if we might start with the Aboriginal programs, because I had just come from prison where I had met lots of Aboriginal people. And I was told that we didn't have Aboriginal programs because there weren't many Aboriginal people in Melbourne. That was from an organisation that, for 70 years had represented or purported to represent the poorest people in this country. Our racism is blind. Even in the places where it should be most obvious, sometimes it's blind. So I'd like to say a couple of sorries for myself. One is that I encouraged a young Aboriginal woman to stand for election, and I supported her to do that. And she asked many, many times that she was unsure of the process. And she said it didn't seem right to her. And I, after getting advice from others, encouraged her to go ahead. That was a great cost to herself and her family. Her sister Jackie and father Alan are both Wurundjeri elders. Her great-great uncle was William Barrack. I threw that encouragement, and then I think my lack of being willing to check ended up in this position, ended up with the job, and she ended up with many, many pages of Herald Sun news. I am really sorry to the family that have an extraordinary tradition of leading the Wurundjeri people. And I am sorry if at any point, my encouragement lacked the kind of rigor that I think we need to ensure that this culture is at the heart of our lives. I think the other thing is during this time, I've been in a position where I've been called, I've had the chair of the Aboriginal portfolio. And many times we have talked to council in meetings and in other places and in external meetings where when support of Aboriginal people comes up, often we are very quick to respond, yes, but what about, let's not lose our colonial history, or let's not lose our multicultural nature. And I sometimes have gone, hold on a minute, do we not recognise that, a multicultural person 10 years after being here has the same life expectancy as the first Australians that landed here, i.e. colonial Australians, and yet Aboriginal people die 10 years younger at least. And I didn't always call it out because I was frightened of the reaction. And lastly, during my time, I have seen one of our team member in Aboriginal Melbourne almost single-handedly now for 10 years. You know, I've seen how difficult that has been over the last 4 years to be a lone Aboriginal voice in an organisation that is often in a hurry, that often hasn't got the time that is necessary to be able to respond with community groups that are poorly resourced and that really, you know, cannot meet our agenda and our needs. And she has stood by this organisation for 10 years at extraordinary personal cost. I won't name her. She knows who she is, and many of you do too. But I want to say, you know, I think I could have done more to have stood as the white fella that got the job and supported more strongly than I did. So if I didn't, and if I missed any opportunity, I am truly sorry. We have an extraordinary opportunity, and councillors, I won't be here, and this will come back after I finish. Many of you will, I hope, have that opportunity to really put at the heart of Melbourne this extraordinary culture. I commend Hans, Hans Berglund. You have been with us now for nearly a year, and you have brought great support to your team, a team now that is no longer a couple of people, but with Hans is Ethan, Rebecca, and of course Jeanette, Kate, Katrina, Louise, Nina next week. This is a team that's well-resourced, supported by the CEO, supported by the executive leadership team, with a great vision for its future and its meaningful place in the life of the city. And so I commend this wrap, I commend the team, and I thank the CEO and the leadership team for their support of that emerging and new Aboriginal Melbourne team. Would the seconder like to speak to the motion?
Thank you, Chair. And yeah, I certainly wholeheartedly endorse this draft reconciliation action plan for community consultation. I acknowledge the excellent work of the team, and we had our Aboriginal City Portfolio meeting this afternoon, and it was very exciting to see, you know, this team that is built under, you know, over the last sort of year or two, and certainly, you know, through your guidance and leadership, Councillor Frances Gillie, you know, yes, unfortunate circumstances that brought you to council, but you've certainly taken the mantle and run with that Future Melbourne goal, you know, the Future Melbourne 2026 goal of a city with an Aboriginal focus, and really made sure that that Aboriginal goal that we have is at the forefront as with all the other goals that we have. So I acknowledge yourself and the team and Hans and Jeanette, and, you know, and seeing this full Zoom board of amazing new members. Ethan's only been here for a week, I believe. And as you say, Nina's joining us next week. And of course, you know, Jeanette, who's just been extraordinary through all of it. And Kate and Alison, Louise, Rebecca, Katrina. It was really great. And I think that the draft reconciliation plan that we're endorsing tonight, the previous one has just recently expired, and this is the new one. It really sets us up, or the new council up, as you say. It will come back pretty much for the first council meeting of the new council, and I think that seems like in a really appropriate time to start that truth telling, to really enhance the internal capabilities of the organisation, but also expand the opportunities with our community, and in particular with our Aboriginal community. I think it's really important, and some of the aspects of this are really, really crucial. I think the fact that one of the largest attendance, the record attendance at a lunchbox, which is the internal City of Melbourne meetings, was one of the largest attended was on Aboriginal protocols. Obviously, there's a thirst or an interest within the organisation to do things better, to work, you know, with our Aboriginal community in a better way, and certainly this wrap will provide other opportunities like that to play out. So yeah, I certainly will watch with interest as it comes back and see what is listed as the final reconciliation action plan in November. And final's the wrong word, because it's really that starting point to then go forth and really do some really excellent things to honour that longest living culture that you certainly speak about very eloquently, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Oak. Would any other councillors like to speak to the motion?
Chair, I might interrupt at this moment and just mention that Deputy Lord Mayor is rejoining the meeting, and just keep an eye out for him coming back on.
I'll wait until he returns. Yeah. Thank you.
I've just spoken to Keith. I think we can keep going for this bit, apparently.
So, Jack, Councillor Watts.
Thank you. I'm delighted to have this before us. It seems to me that we are very fortunate to have had someone such as yourself representing the interests of Aboriginal Melbourne, and backed, of course, led in some ways by our team in many ways. What I think is important is that it's in actually our vision for reconciliation. And what it says is that we do believe that Melbourne can do better. And how we're going to do better is spelled out very clearly in this document, and I'm very happy to support it.
Thank you, Councillor Watts. Lord Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Francis Gillian. I too want to speak in support of this motion this evening. As has been noted, but I think it's important for as many people as possible to say, I am proud of the incredibly rich Aboriginal history dating back more than 65,000 years of Melbourne. And I'm so pleased that as a city and a community, we are working towards a real recognition and celebration of the shared history. The draft reconciliation plan that we're considering this evening is, I think, a frank appraisal of what the City of Melbourne can do, what we should do, what we need to be doing better. This is an important step forward to us. Thank you to Hans and his team, for everybody, Councillor Francis Gilly, you as well, who have worked on this for time. To you, Councillor, you have consistently challenged the beliefs and the comfort zones of councillors, of exec team, and of the community, and you've done that all to pursue a really important discussion, debate and outcomes, to make us a better city. So thank you to you and to all of the team. I'm proud to support this plan. I hope that through public consultation, we can have those important conversations. We can acknowledge the history, be excited about the future, and that a stronger reconciliation plan that we've all contributed to will help our organisation, our community and city be inclusive, close the gap and tackle important issues that have been long in the waiting and are deserving of our attention, our resources and our energy. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Are there any other speakers? Yes, Councillor Pinder.
Thanks, Chair. I'd like to congratulate Hans on giving this important piece of work the momentum it so deserves. I think, Hans, your strong leadership is much lauded, and your willingness to bring honesty and respect to the table in respect of this kind of melding. And I really look up to you, and have had some terrific meetings with you, and I can see that your energy and enthusiasm is so embedded in this report. It is only something that is going to go a long, long way. So I certainly applaud your work. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Pinder. Are there any other speakers to the motion? Yes, Councillor.
Thank you, Councillor Nicola Francis Skilly, and I think I too also want to throw my support as someone who didn't know too much about the Aboriginal culture, and I guess my hands on heart to say it was probably in terms of priority or interest, it was definitely not up there. But I think I've not only sharing the office with you, Councillor Nick Francis Keeley, but also seeing the great work that City of Melbourne does. You know, not the personal story that I think I've told all of you is, you know, I was looking to climb Uluru at the end of my, you know, went before it closed. But I decided not to forego that opportunity, you know, for that holiday or, you know, the opportunity to climb it, because I note the different opinions about that, even though I still encourage others to do so. But at the same time, for me personally, I made that choice. And, you know, yes, financially it might have been a big amount, and also the opportunity to do that might not be ever again be available to me. But I've, you know, that was in terms of, you know, in terms of advocacy and the, you know, what you're trying to achieve, Councillor Francis-Gilley, and also what City of Melbourne achieved, you know, the fact that I'm willing to kind of really listen to that and also act on that is something that I'm really proud of. And I hope, you know, I look forward to supporting something like this ongoing. And also just wanted to say thanks for your great work.
Thank you, Councillor Lulu. Is there any other speakers to the motion? Yes, Councillor Reed.
Thanks, Councillor Francis. We're just coming off mute there. Look, can I also begin by acknowledging the way that you have just thrown yourself into this portfolio, Councillor Francis Gilley, just boots and all, and with just so much heart, which is just so much, it goes to your character. And thank you for all you've done in this portfolio, and thank you for moving the RAP forward. Also acknowledge the great work of Hans and the team, realising that a project of this magnitude and effort is very much a team effort. Look, can I just point out that the RAP is very much something that is prescribed by Reconciliation Australia. This is an exercise, a framework, which has a lot of thinking behind it, a lot of good thinking behind it. And it is something that is a very good thing for Melbourne. I think it's also important to note that 40 local government areas do indeed have RAPs at various stages. So this is something which is advancing, not just in the City of Melbourne, but across communities, across Victoria and indeed Australia. And again, I think that's a very positive thing, and it's reflective of a journey which Australia and local communities in Australia are on. Finally, can I say that I think the inclusion of the truth-telling component in this RAP is very important. I also think that Melburnians shouldn't feel threatened by that. They shouldn't feel that that is something to be feared. In fact, they should see it as a necessary part of the reconciliation process, and a very important part, because at the end of the day, we need to know the truth, we need to know the history of our place, and I do think this RAP is going to take Melbourne and the people of this place significantly forward in that regard. So it's not to say it won't be challenging. It's not to say it won't be difficult at times, but it has to be done, and it's a good thing that it is being done. So very happy to speak to support this motion, Councillor Francis Gilley.
Thank you, Councillor Reese. Is there anyone else that would like to speak to the motion? Yes, Councillor.
Thank you, Chair, and can I add to the comments of my other colleagues, and thank you for your custodianship of this portfolio. And for what you said today, thank you so much. I approached this issue as one of 11 non-Aboriginal councillors, and it's something that we as a capital city council need to take very, very seriously. I confess that in my nearly 8 years as a councillor,
I have learnt a hell of a lot about the way government and Aboriginal people relationships work and the history of the first peoples of this state, and maybe 99% of everything I know about Aboriginal Australia I learnt since I was elected, and that is a symptom of perhaps our education systems, but also perhaps of the privilege of the positions that we are in, when we have access to and the willingness of traditional owners who want to engage with us, to educate us, to help us to have these conversations with Melburnians more generally. The two proudest moments of my time here at council by far have been standing on country in Tasmania at Cape Grim and Eddiston Point and Musselroe Bay with traditional owners on the country of Tunaminawait and Morboyhina, with artists as they were preparing to find a contemporary interpretation and tell the story of the first men hanged in Melbourne, and learning about how people lived on country before things were thrown on their head, but more importantly, just from a governance perspective, learning about the role of government and how things have changed since. I've never learned more in a shorter period of time than then. Now, that's a very reflective, sometimes backward and backwards-looking thing to consider. But the second reflection I've got, the most proud moment I've ever had as a councillor in my portfolio in arts and culture, is watching a black-led, black-produced, black-directed, black-choreographed, black-acted, black-performed Yirrumboy really come into its own, and the celebration of everything that is not just informed by generations of Aboriginal practice and culture, but things, but everything that is utterly new and unique and born of entirely unique circumstances by black artists that has been brought to, had been facilitated by Yirrumboy, and that is something that the City of Melbourne should be exceptionally proud of. But again, I'm embarrassed that, again, 99% of what I know about Aboriginal Melbourne is because of my role as a councillor, and it's been pushed in front of me rather than me wanting to know and seek it out, which is the position I had beforehand, because it wasn't apparent to me what the role of a citizen was in educating themselves. But my position has changed dramatically in that it's not about learning about our history, it's about learning about the people right next to us. Aboriginal Melbourne can be hidden from the cliques that we sometimes move within, and Aboriginal Melbourne is absolutely everywhere. And so I do hope that as we enter a possibly very deep recession, as we think about what the future of the city holds, that we as a capital city council really put forefront the experiences, the views, the opinions of the Aboriginal people all around us who have so much to tell this city and to help shape this city in the direction that it should be going ahead in. We're talking about economic recovery, we're talking about creative recovery, and we're talking about recovery in all sorts of lenses. But wouldn't it be fantastic that as we imagine a new normal, or as we reimagine what the city of the future might look like, that we are talking about truth-telling, about reconciliation, but a whole lot more than that, about taking the Aboriginal excellence and creativity that we know is absolutely everywhere around us and making that the centrepiece of this remarkable city. So the Reconciliation Action Plan is central to that, and there are some brilliant ideas in here, and I really hope that it's not just seen to be a project of the Aboriginal Melbourne team. Of course, this is a project for absolutely all of us, and this is a journey that as we embark on, I'm really, really looking forward to where it takes us. And thank you to everyone involved.
you, Councillor Rees. Are there any other councillors that would like to speak?
Point of order.
Yes.
Leppert. sorry, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Leppert. Councillor Riley.
Thank you, Chair. Look, I think the councillors have all covered up on every aspect of this. I'm congratulating yourself as the Chair that has actually made us all step up and take notice, actually, more so than we have in the past. And to the team behind this, this is just an amazing piece of work, and that will take us right through as a starting point and getting us more involved. And I love the idea of the truth telling. I like the idea that we can spread the word. And I think we've, for the first time, I think, in the capital city, and I've been around a while, they've actually stopped and listened to what Melbourne is trying to tell us. And the reconciliation plan is a part of that. So thank you, all of you, for bringing it to our attention.
Thank you, Councillor Riley. Is there any other councillors that would like to speak to the motion? Wood, sorry.
Sorry, Chair, I just lost the last bit of your what you were saying there, so I wasn't sure if you were referring to me. I have had a few technical issues, so I've missed some of the debate also, the joys of going completely online. But I just wanted to say thank you to you as Chair, thank you to Hans and the whole team for their work on this wrap. And I also just want to sort of thank and people like Jeanette and Shane, and who were sort of, you know, working away with not, you know, widespread kind of numbers behind them, supporting them. And the pleasing thing, I think, is we're in a really different place to what we were, you know, those years ago. And I think this is an excellent piece of work. I grew up on Latchi Latchi land in Mildura, and spent a lot of my early work life with our Kids Teaching Kids environmental program with the Bakinji and Latchi Latchi. You know, we learnt so much from them, not just about Aboriginal history, but also about Aboriginal contemporary culture as well. And so I think the more that we can, you know, close the gaps in terms of tangible reconciliation around around health, around employment, around education, that's fantastic. So things like, you know, our grants that are going to Aboriginal small businesses and startups, I think is absolutely fantastic. What Justin and the whole organisation has done with Aboriginal employment is excellent. We've still got a long way to go on, you know, a lot of those other measures as a nation. But I think probably the critical part of this wrap is that that truth telling and that honesty. So probably like the Chair, there's going to be some difficult and uncomfortable conversations, but I think we'll all grow as a result of that. Things like Yirrumbuy really celebrate Aboriginal culture in all of its glory, but with that we have to acknowledge the painful history as well. So well done to the entire team.
Thank you, Councillor Wood. Is there any other speakers to the motion? I might make just a couple of concluding comments. I think, first of all, in terms of as we think about, you know, what is Melbourne going to be in the future? You know, our city has drastically changed in the last 6 months. And one of the things that I think I have got excited about Melbourne over the last few years is meeting its culture, you know, realising that for all of those thousands, tens of thousands of years, people have been travelling in from this state all over the Kulin Nation to meet, you know, using well-told song lines to get them to a river, to camp, to trade and to marry and to do all the things that made their lives work. I think we are going to have to re-envisage a little bit what Melbourne might do if can't get all those people all at the same time in lifts up buildings. And I'm hoping that a part of that reimagining is really remembering that Melbourne at its heart still has all those lines, you know, maybe now cycle lines as well, and tram lines and train lines coming here. And our job will be to keep supporting people to meet culture, to meet art, to meet each other, to meet to do those things at work that you can't do on your own at home. And I think to embrace that extraordinary, globally significant history as a meeting place, I think is going to be part of our recovery. Well, I at least hope it will be. And I wish you good luck with that, because I think we'll be doing it for some time. And lastly, I learned my first few words of Wurrung from Brooke Wandon, who actually, like many Wurundjeri people, much of the language was almost lost. It was lost to a stolen generation. And in our Reconciliation Action Plan, we specifically talk about re-engaging with the stolen generation and what that has meant for this city and what it meant for Aboriginal culture. And I know when my first year, I met with Auntie Zita, who herself had to remember her language because as being part of a family and being removed, lost that connection to her words. So I thought I might, Auntie Zita taught me to acknowledge country in Wurrung on Wurundjeri land, and I'm here in Fitzroy on Wurundjeri land, so I thought I might just use a few words of Wurrung to close. And I am aware that to use Aboriginal language itself, given that it has been stolen with many other bits, is complex. So I do it with great respect and just to use those words and knowing that they were, you know, given and taught to me by a Wurundjeri woman. So Marambik Burundup, Wurundjeri Willamu, Liwiku Kulan, Yurimboi Ba Yurimboi. I pay my respects to Wurundjeri traditional owners, their ancestors, and the Kulin people, past and present. Thank you for the debate, and I'll now put that to vote. All those in favour? And that is, yes, thank you, Councillor Louis. That is unanimous. Thank you. I now call on Deputy Lord Mayor Aaron Wood to assume the role of chair of the meeting in relation to the finance and governance portfolio.
We are a bit ahead of ourselves. I think we're going to Councillor Pinder for the role of chair in relation to people, city portfolio. That's my understanding.
I'm sorry, Chair, that is correct.
That's all right. Good. Yep. Over to you, Councillor Pinder. Thanks, Councillor Francis Gilley. Great motion and debate.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. There's one report from management for consideration under the People's City Portfolio, agenda item 6.4. Endorsement of the concept design plans and project update for the redevelopment of Western Pavilion in Royal Park. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? No? Councillor Roke, you've got a question, I think. Is that correct?
Sorry, no, I'm happy for you to ask if you want. I was just going to ask if Joe Wandell's online, so not a presentation per se, but we've received a few submissions regarding a few of the design elements in that we're looking at tonight. I'm just wondering if she could respond in particular to the mounds that are part of the design. And feel free to respond to anything else that we've received from the Friends of Royal Park and also Kate Oddy in their submissions to us tonight.
Joe, are you there?
Yes, thank you, Councillor Pinder. Thank you, Councillor Oak. Good evening, Lord Mayor and councillors. The landscape proposal for Western Pavilion takes into consideration its unique context at the heart of the state's significant Royal Park. The heritage impact study has been independently prepared to accompany a future heritage permit application subject to this evening's meeting. The study confirms the proposal does align with the objectives of the Royal Park planting plan. The proposal comprises trees, understory Indigenous grasses and gently contoured mounds which help to nestle the pavilion into the broader Royal Park landscape. The mounds range between 60 centimetres and 1 metre in height and would be experienced as an undulating terrain, evocative of the open woodland and grassland ecological vegetation classes which characterise Royal Park. The mounds seek to soften the visual impact of the pavilion from Park Street, emphasising a foreground that helps to establish the landscape as dominant over the building. A key requirement of the project brief and the master plan is visual mitigation of the pavilion in the landscape. The mounds enable the retention of clean soil excavated from the site and reduce the need for transport associated costs and emissions to dispose of this off-site. When preparing landscape plans around buildings, principles of safety by design are also considered. Dense tree and shrub planting is generally discouraged to ensure clear views and associated passive surveillance for all users at all times. By introducing the gentle undulating topography in this location, the design seeks to best respond to design principles for safety and crime prevention through environmental design, as well as integration within context. Undulated terrain and mound features are heavily used around the zoo perimeter to establish landscape dominance over built form presence, establishing a precedent at Royal Park. Thank you, councillors.
Councillor, thank you, Jo. Is that okay, Councillor Oak? That answers the question. And I think, Councillor Watts, you had a question at during the day.
Yes, it was. Thank you. Just a question of adult changing rooms for the disabled, not adult, just for disabled spectators or disabled participants in the sporting, whatever sport is undertaken here. What I understand is it the case that we are seeking further advice about such the provision of such services?
Thank you for your question, Councillor Watts. The building responds to world's best principles for universal access. There are no ramps or steps in the facility. Door latch and hinge clearances exceed the minimum code requirement, and the facility includes ambulant cubicles and accessible toilet cubicles with accessible showers. An accessible adult change facility was considered as part of the Western Pavilion design process. Western Pavilion is the smallest of the three pavilions at Royal Park, and is attached to a single oval. Rider Pavilion footprint is restricted by space. Brens Pavilion is the largest of the three pavilions in this program of works, containing 8 gender equal change rooms. There is enough room in this location to allow for the inclusion of an accessible adult change facility if it is assessed as beneficial to the precinct. It is management's intention to engage an access consultant to assess the potential of including an accessible adult change facility into the design of Brens Pavilion, which will be the subject of a future FMC meeting. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jo. I now call on Dean Patch, Brunswick Hockey Club, who requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter. Dean, to speak for no more than 3 minutes, Dean.
Not a problem. Can you hear me okay?
Thank you.
No problems at all. I'm here on behalf of the Brunswick Hockey Club. We're commending the council's decision to upgrade those sporting facilities. We are your near neighbours, so we're 1.5 kilometres up the road from these facilities. We run a small hockey club with 460 players, roughly 30 teams. But I thought I would draw councillors' attention to a little bit of our journey and some of the needs of the community that you serve. So we've, part of our success recently has been unashamedly pursuing a community hockey agenda, so community sporting agenda that crosses local government boundaries. So we run a schools program in serving some schools in the City of Melbourne precinct. We also work with the North Melbourne Footy Club's Huddle program, serving an after-school program in the flats at Flemington and Kensington. And most importantly, and this was the motivation for me making the submission to you, is we've started up over the last couple of years an outreach program to international students. And it's that learning that I wanted to share with council, with the view to, as it thinks about how it might develop other sporting facilities, particularly in properties like Royal Park, that it might serve this very underserved group for community sport. The council may be aware that there are 150,000 students enrolled in the CBD of Melbourne. 38,000 of those come from countries where hockey is a predominant sport. So the single biggest cohort, bigger than even the Chinese students are Indian students. So there are 35,000 Indian students. The fastest growing cohort is in the Punjab, where hockey is like AFL. We started up a night for that group last year. We were knocked down in the rush. And as council thinks about where it might place its sporting bets, I'd encourage it to consider culturally relevant sports for those 150,000 students. They are the participants. They are your next participants, and community sporting clubs provide a fantastic way for students to get to know the country that they've come to study in, but to connect with others through a sport that they actually love. So were council minded, it would be great to think about an international student sporting precinct that community clubs could actually populate and deliver those sports. I hope you consider that idea as you progress your development plans. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Dean. Thanks for sticking to the time frame as well. I think I've lost myself here. Yep. No. Right, I'm right to go. Okay. So I think I'll move this motion. And do I have a seconder? Is there a call on the councillor to move to second this motion? Councillor Watts? Hi, sorry, couldn't see you there. Okay, so I'll speak to this motion. Is that that's okay? This is a real good news story, Lord Mayor and councillors. This is really the city's injection of trust and confidence in women's sport, and the need to enable it to survive through these tough times, and to watch it sail into an era of acceptance, inclusion, and connection. Our local sporting clubs are the heart and lungs of our city, and they bring soul to our community, helping people to connect and to combat isolation on a level playing field, the sporting green. And as Dean has just said, be it football, hockey, and I quite like table tennis as well, Dean, which is more of an Asian sport. All of these really help our new emigres to actually feel like they're part of the fabric of our society. If endorsed tonight, these plans will proceed to a tender phase with construction planned to commence in December this year. So we have gender neutral change rooms, we have change rooms for umpires, we've got better storage, space for social activities and food preparation, and more accessibility all round. So it is all looking like, you know, really like Trump's, pardon the pun, for this section of our municipality, which has scores of young people keen and eager to take to the Western Pavilion and be a part of one of nearly 375 teams that use the pavilion each week, with 90 of these made up of women and girls. And I reckon this number will double by the end of 2021. And perhaps, yes, Dean, we could include hockey and table tennis and all of those other sports. But it's a rich and worthy project that will last for generations to come. So I highly commend this motion. Councillor Watts?
Thank you. Thank you for so eloquently describing the wonderful benefits of this particular project. As a hockey enthusiast, I listened to Dean and it was music to my ears. But more of that, I would like to say, having taken part in discussions around the future of Melbourne, that the Future Melbourne Task Force in the city over recent months, it's clear that we have to ensure that our community has a sense of belonging to our city. And if there's one thing that sporting endeavour does, belonging to teams and belonging to their city, is a very important aspect, whether it's international students or our community. And of course, the sports clubs taking advantage of our sporting facilities in Melbourne are from much wider than just Melbourne itself, and not just our community either. So I think all in all, this project really symbolises a really valuable investment that the City of Melbourne is making in our people and the people beyond our municipality. It's a very worthwhile project.
Thank you, Councillor Watts. Are there any speakers against the motion? Sorry, Councillor Leppard, you would like to speak?
Sorry, I don't want to speak against the motion, but I thought it might be fair near the start of the debate to consider an amendment. So I'd like to move an amendment at this point, and that is to add the words subject to removal of the mounds after the word pavilion in 11.1.
So you're saying I did something wrong there, Councillor?
Not at all. I'm just requesting that if I move the amendment now near the start of the debate, that might be easier than moving it near the end of the debate. And if that's okay, I'd like to move that amendment.
Yeah. So is there a seconder for that amendment? Councillor Rogue, would you like to speak to it, please?
Thank you very much, Councillor Pinder, and I agree with everything you've said already, and when we get back to the substantive debate, I'll expand on that, but I won't labour this point on the amendment. I just think it's worth acknowledging that the submitters to us, who are important stakeholders in Royal Park, Friends of Royal Park and other stakeholder groups, have pointed out that we have relied heavily on the 1984 master plan and not so much on the 1998 master plan when it comes to designing how this pavilion sits within the landscape. In and of itself, the designs with the mounds are architecturally valid, but when you take the broader view, I am a little concerned about the further precedence of continuing to mound up the soil excavated from the sites of this and potential future building works within what is now a state heritage listed park. Remember, we've got other pavilions to come, and I am worried about the cumulative effect of what's been described to us quite humorously in the submissions as pimples of soil around each of these new buildings. So I believe it will cost up to $25,000 to remove the soil off-site, which in the context of a $2.99 million project is fair, I believe. But essentially the rationale for this amendment is this, that the landscaping objectives that are purported to be for this project for the mounds, which is to ensure that the building appears naturally within the landscape and doesn't dominate views back to Park Street and the car park, can equally be accommodated with planting of trees, taller shrubs and grasses. And given that, we should take a purer view and remove the mounds because the Royal Park is on the State Heritage Register, as I said. The statement of significance says that this park is significant because it retains its basic form, because of its custodianship by the council under a design philosophy that recognises the natural landscape, and because the mounds are inconsistent with the natural undulations of the park. And of course, the Royal Park Master Plan 98 doesn't advocate for this sort of retention of excavated soil on site. There are arguments both ways on this, but on balance, I'd like to side with the stakeholder submitters that have suggested to us that we should remove the mounds for policy reasons. And I think when you take the broader view about all the works that have happened to date within the park, and I don't think the zoo does set a precedent, and all the works that will come in future, that they do have a valid point. And on that basis, I think the project should proceed, but without the mounds, and that's the purpose of the amendment. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Would Councillor Roark, would you like to speak?
I think that, Councillor Leppard has certainly articulated well the arguments that have been put forward throughout today from our submitters and from the team. And I think on balance, I think this amendment will remove that concern about the precedent of going off the heritage listed and the important master plan that we have for Royal Park, and certainly erring on the side of caution and in respect of the submissions that have come through from the Royal Park, Friends of Royal Park and other submitters. So yeah, I support this amendment for those reasons.
Thank you. Is there another councillor who wishes to speak to this amendment? Councillor Wood?
Thanks, Chair. I'll speak against the amendment. I think, you know, we should always try and respond to submitters wherever we can, but also we should try and follow process wherever we can as well and be pure in that process. And what will happen with this proposal is that we'll go to Heritage Victoria, just like any other proposal that requires Heritage Victoria approval. They'll make an assessment and they'll make their ruling accordingly. So I think we should, we've always deferred to the experts in Heritage on many occasions. We certainly did with our earlier item tonight. So that from a process point of view, we need to be pure about this in sending it to Heritage Victoria to make their decision. And we do have an independent Heritage report too on this that that the mounds are actually acceptable, and the idea that the zoo doesn't set a precedent, I think, is incorrect. It simply does. Mounding has been used to ensure that belt form isn't dominant, and we can refer to the 98 master plan, or we can go back as far as the 80s, where the original master plans entertain the idea of not having the built form dominate the natural form. So on balance, this is a very sensible way of doing things, but we still have the step of Heritage Victoria who rightly should determine this. And when you think about the sorts of trade-offs that would be made is you can't simply use vegetation to perform the same function because of the SEPTED, the safety concerns, the SEPTED reports around locating vegetation close to areas that'll be used by, you know, community members and young people. These are the sorts of things that we should abide by as well. So I won't be supporting the amendment and would return to debating the substantive motion should this fail.
Is there another speaker to the amendment? No, well then I'll put the amended motion to, or the amendment to the vote. All those in favour? That's Councillor Leppard, Councillor Gilley, Councillor Oak. I can't see Councillor Louis, sorry about that. I don't know where, Councillor Louis, is your hand? I can't see you, I'm sorry. So,
hands down, Councillor Pinder.
How do I go down?
No, his hand, Councillor Louis. Councillor Louis' hand is down.
Oh, down, is it? Okay. So, Councillors Gilley, Rees, and Leppert are for the amendment, and Councillors Louis, Wood, Councillor Capp, Councillor Lalou, Councillor Watts, and Councillor Pinder are against the amendment. So we shall return to the...
Councillor Pinder, I apologise. I think I was actually stroking my beard thoughtfully there, not actually casting a vote. So yeah, I think okay. You may have counted me in the affirmative where I'm actually in the negative on that amendment.
So it's only Councillor Leppard and Councillor Oak who are in the affirmative.
I was also against the amendment and you didn't mention me.
Sorry, couldn't see you. Okay. So shall I start again? Councillor Leppard and Councillor Oak are for the amendment, and Councillors Rees, Councillor...
Sorry, Chair.
Councillor Gilley, Councillor Leppard and Councillor Oak are for the amendment, and Councillors Rees, Councillor Riley, Councillor Lalou, Councillor Capp, Wood, Louis and Councillor Pinder are against the amendment. So shall we now return to the substantive motion? And are there any speakers who would like to speak to the substantive motion, please? Councillor Leppert.
Thank you, Chair. For the same reasons you've set out in your moving statement, I strongly support this motion. With or without the mounds, this is something that we've all been pushing for a long time. I do hope that we can secure extra external grants to help pay for this, but women's sports and ensuring that all of our sporting pavilions are up to scratch in terms of access for everyone is just so important. For Brens, Ryder and Western, this is on the smaller side. Brens, of course, is the big one of the three, but this is the first cab off the rank, and I do very much hope that we can get shovels in the ground as soon as possible. There's a few statutory processes to go, as has been mentioned already. The Heritage Victoria process is yet to come. As the Deputy Lord Mayor has pointed out, the stakeholders may still yet get the outcome that they seek, but whatever comes out of that process is the outcome that Heritage Victoria and the heritage experts will put forward. So I accept that point entirely. And I just hope that we can have a new Schmick sporting facility ready for the many, many, many clubs that use this facility as soon as possible. I'd also like to thank all of the officers for working on this. This is part of the new delegations policy where projects of this size and scale come to committee or council for sign-off, which is a policy change that we made last month. And I think that it is a good opportunity to let submitters have their say and to allow the transparency of the process to run its course, whatever the outcome happens to be. So I'm sure that those submitters might still get their outcome and they'll be happy at least to see the process go through. So thank you, Chair. I agree with you.
Councillor Wood.
Thanks, Chair. I agree entirely. I think this is absolutely fantastic to get to this stage. I've been pushing for this for a long time. So obviously I would have loved to have been in a position of having all three pavilions starting construction imminently, with Brens and Ryder very much needing the similar sort of upgrades to Western Pavilion. But excellent to see the design work that's gone into this, the fact that 350 metres squared of open space will be actually returned as a result of rationalising some of the car parking from the old footprint. And, ultimately, grassroots sport is what we should be all about. It's about community connection. It's about health. And when you consider the impacts of COVID, that community connection, mental health and well-being is just going to be so critical. And, the many occasions that we met with the women's sporting teams down at Brens and sort of heard the substandard facilities that they were putting up with, to see Western be the first cab off the rank and get up-to-date gender-equal change rooms and facilities is going to be, a boon for what is a massive growth in women's sport. But also due recognition for the huge community hours that those community sporting clubs put in to keep their teams going. So to have, kitchen facilities, to have meeting facilities and all these sorts of things can help them actually generate income to keep their clubs going, because we're going to need them more than ever when we come out the other side of COVID. So nothing better than supporting sport and nothing better than supporting the huge growth in women's sport. So I can't wait to see this pavilion begin construction and near completion.
Are there any other speakers to the motion? Councillor Rees?
Thank you very much, Councillor Pinder. One of the great things about local government is that you get to work on projects that make a real difference to your community and really, make a difference close to home. And, for me, I've got first-hand experience of my daughters playing soccer in Royal Park. And, sadly, as a councillor, I do have to report that, the facilities in certainly the northern end of Royal Park are not what they should be, and the dearth of facilities for girls and women is just simply not on in 2020. So it's just absolutely fantastic to see that this investment is being made by the City of Melbourne. For a whole bunch of reasons, including quite personal ones, this is just a great, great thing to see. Can I also congratulate the team at the City of Melbourne for the scoping and design of the Western Pavilion? I think they've done a really good job. I must say I quite like the soil mounds as a design feature of the pavilion. But when you get a submission from someone like Coyote, you know, the person who is a legend of Melbourne, you obviously pay a lot of attention to that. So I have reviewed Kay's submission and the submission of the Friends of Royal Park. And look, ultimately, I am comforted and able to support the motion as it stands, knowing that this will be reviewed by Heritage Victoria, and if there is an issue there, well, that it can be addressed through that process. And overall, I do think that this is a terrific design, a terrific project, and very much very pleased about to support it and see it going forward.
Thank you, Councillor Rees. Councillor Roque.
Thank you, Chair. I was just going to reflect on and some of our other submitters, you know, calling for, you know, other facilities for more, you know, for other sports and for, you know, international students and the like, and you know, reflect that, you know, when it comes to open space and active recreation in our municipality, we are never really going to ever have enough, and we can only do more to increase not only you know, space for nature, but obviously space for people. And it is, as I think many have commented, but in particular Deputy Lord Mayor, you know, it would be fabulous if we could be progressing multiple projects to boost that capacity, but you know, we are limited and it's unfortunate that we can't at the moment, but let's hope that we can bring more funding and get more of these pavilions up and running. And the only other reflection I have, absolutely, we need to be increasing facilities and opportunities for young girls, you know, for girls and women to play sport. And I always just think it's funny when we talk about the facilities, it's just that it's a given that because men have had more access to facilities that they just will continue to have access to the facilities, and that we've got to find new or alternative spaces for women. But it's just it'd be interesting to flip it and say, well, you know, why is that the case? Just as a reflection. But other than that, of course, you know, thank you to the team, and I, you know, I really look forward to this one progressing, and then the next, and the next, and the next.
Thank you, Councillor Oak. Does anyone else? Councillor Gilley, do you want to say something?
Only to say I coached two girls' soccer teams, and we used these facilities, and almost every week when we were down there, the girls would say, the boys' changing rooms are disgusting. So for all those female athletes that are now going to not have to go through that, I'll celebrate for them. And thanks for all the work.
Thanks, Councillor Gilley. I think that's it. No one else wants to speak. So I will now put the motion to the vote. Actually, I'd like to say a couple of things. I just want to thank Councillor Wood for his hard work. Thank you in actually taking me along this with you as well. And I think let's not preempt the experts, and let's be guided by our expert staff who are guiding us sensibly through this with, you know, well-articulated design. And I for one do like the mounds. And Dean, I'll put in a good word for you with your hockey. But may I ask for all of those who are for the motion to raise their hand. Councillor Louis, are you for or against? So Councillor Louis, Councillor Wood, Councillor Capp, Councillor Liu, Councillor Oak, Councillor Watts, Councillor Leppert, Councillor Pinder, Councillor Rees, and Councillor Gilley, and Councillor Riley. Unanimous vote. I now call on the Deputy Lord Mayor, Aaron Wood, to assume the role of Chair of the meeting in relation to the Finance and Governance portfolio.
Thanks very much, Councillor Pinder. So there is one report under the Finance and Governance portfolio, and that is agenda item 6.5, supporting small businesses through the environmental upgrade agreement legislation and model. And I just ask if councillors would like a presentation on this item. I'll take that as a no. I'm happy to move the motion on screen, and I ask for a seconder to that motion. That's Councillor Riley. Thank you, Councillor Riley. Look, the motion was moved a couple of meetings ago, and this was really to look at how can we get cash for small businesses in our city that were really finding it quite constrained due to the fact that we, are in an environment where lenders have really tightened up on lending. And that's not to say that these businesses aren't viable businesses, just to say that the availability of credit is more and more difficult in these pretty uncertain times. And obviously the great success of our environmental upgrade agreement legislation really, blazed the trail, a new product in effect that saw many building owners able to upgrade their buildings for energy efficiency, for HVAC upgrades, lighting, solar, all sorts of upgrades that then were able to be paid back through their rates notices. And indeed, a lot of the time, the tenant then enjoyed the savings and sort of there could be an agreement between the landlord and the tenant to share some of the cost as well in terms of the rates being part of the outgoing. So a really innovative model, absolutely took off. The legislation became Victoria-wide and then, of course, has been picked up in other states across Australia as well. So I really wanted officers to have a look at whether or not that could be broadened out to take in other types of upgrades and potentially get some cash to some of these small businesses that need it at the moment. It's still a bank ultimately lending. If it's the Sustainable Australia Fund, Bank Australia sits behind that. So it is still a bank finance model. Obviously, officers are recommending that it has its limitations, obviously, and that we continue to work with state and federal governments to provide support to small businesses in the city. I guess what I'm pleased about is that the Sustainable Australia Fund themselves have actually put in a really good submission and they're going to pick up lobbying the Victorian government for changes in the Local Government Act that potentially could broaden out the availability of this finance to things like upgrading buildings for COVID, to make them COVID safe. So I think these are the sorts of innovations which I'd hope to see in the recommendation. They aren't in the recommendation, but I think the motion has, I guess, done what it was intended to do, and that's to flush out the submission from the Sustainable Australia Fund, who will take up that that push for a change in legislation. Councillor Riley. Councillor Riley there, are we?
Chair, it's Beck here from Council Business. My controls tell me that Councillor Riley is still part of the meeting, but she's not appearing on screen.
I can't see her either.
Can you see me? Can you hear me?
We can hear you. We just can't see you. So go ahead, Councillor Riley.
Thank you. Thank you, Deputy Lord Mayor. Look, disappointing as it is, I accept management's decision that this model is unacceptable. However, I do hope the management do not give up on this and the door's not shut. I think we have to continue to pursue other opportunities as they arise that may help small businesses in this very important area. So, yes, it was a great exercise, DLM, and I do thank you and Councillor Oak for bringing it to Council, but I'd like to just for us to keep working on some other solutions to help small business. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Riley. Any other speakers to this motion? And Councillor Leppett.
Thank you, Chair. I support this motion as well. I think it's really disappointing that we have a new Local Government Act 2020 that still doesn't have a single clause in it relating to how to define rates, how to define any finance mechanism or revenue mechanism. And there's just still a catch-all clause saying that certain parts of the 1989 Act continue to apply until the state government's ready to insert a section about rates and EUAs and finances into the new Act. So I think there's still opportunity if the state government has the capacity, which is a big question. So I'm just going to pause. I'm not sure if I'm meant to continue. Chair, am I meant to
keep going ahead, Councillor Leppard. Right. I think we've just got some background noise there, which I'm not sure where it's coming from.
No worries. I just hope I wasn't interrupting the technology in any way. So there is an opportunity to modernise the way local government works with building owners and occupiers to finance their operations, whether that's directly with rates or whether it's paying back in lieu of rates in an EUA-like mechanism. So I think there's always interesting things here to explore, but we also have to be realistic at this time. It is incredibly cheap to borrow at this time. There are extraordinary grants programs available to businesses and building occupiers, and I'm assuming that in a potentially quite deep recession that there will be those sorts of grants for some time. Legislative change is not quick. And whilst I wish Scott Boxay all the very best, I'm not sure that we've got the silver bullet just around the corner for new forms of finance for businesses to upgrade. The idea is brilliant, but I'm not sure that we're there just yet. But of course, with that submission that you have flushed out, to use your words, Chair, there's obviously a lot of ambition for Sustainable Australia Fund to do bigger and new things, and they should be utterly commended on that. But we don't write the local government legislation. All we can really do is hope that the state government does take their responsibilities for writing the new legislation when it comes to defining, regulating rates and all of the other finance mechanisms that are associated with local government, that they do it thoroughly and properly in the months to come. And I hope that that comes with extensive consultation, and we'll have another opportunity to feed into that as the City of Melbourne.
Thanks, Councillor Leppard. Any other speakers to this item? I don't think so. If not, I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour, hands raised. Yep, we've got everyone, so I declare that carried unanimously. And I hand back to the Lord Mayor for the remainder of the meeting.
Thank you, Councillor Wood, Deputy Lord Mayor. Well, this concludes reports from management in open session this evening. We do have one item of general business to be considered in open session. It's notice of motion, Councillor Susan Riley, publication, the year that was, 2020, to record the COVID-19 crisis and the impact on the City of Melbourne. I'm calling on Councillor Riley to move the motion.
Thank you, I will, Lord Mayor. Can you hear me?
Yes, I'm calling on Councillor Watts to second the motion.
Yes.
Good, over to you, Councillor Riley, thank you.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. The impact from COVID-19 crisis continues to ripple through our city and our community, and will continue to do so for some time. I'm keenly aware of the elevated concerns around business, prosperity, wellbeing, health, safety and financial security at this time. However, I do think it is so very important we document this. To that end, I'm putting forward this motion tonight to seek a commitment that we do just that, to create a world what we did as a council and what the community experienced. I don't anticipate this would require immediate resourcing. That is something for management to consider when we get past this, and we will. I look forward to a time when we can look back and reflect for generations to come, and I recommend this motion to my fellow councillors. Thank you, Lord Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Riley. Over to you, Councillor Watts.
Thank you. Thank you. And I thank Councillor Riley for bringing this to our attention. We are in the midst of a crisis. We all know that. We know that the city has, and I commend the CEO for this and my colleagues, this city has responded in an extraordinary way. Smart, humane and timely. I fear that it's a long way to go before we reach the end of 2020. Already We're having to put additional measures in place to deal with what's happening. None of this effort should go unrecorded. And as Chair of Knowledge City and Deputy Chair of People City, I think it's important to indicate at this point that we recognise the extraordinary work that's been going on and put into place mechanisms for recording it and eventually recording it for posterity. I'm hoping this never happens to us again, but if it does, we'll certainly know what's worked and what has not worked, and I think this is a very important exercise for our city. I'm delighted to second this motion.
Thank you, Councillor Watts. Councillors, are there any other speakers to this motion? Councillor Pinder.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I'm very supportive of this motion, Councillor Riley, as it sets out to chronicle a major world event and its impact on Melbourne. So well done, really good. While I feel that if it were to be a historical piece, then we need to be futuristic in our thinking and not settle for that which we have known in our lifetime or are even familiar with. We need to broaden our thinking. Equally, I think we must not be myopic in our view. We also need to consider not just what the city has enacted as a result of this pandemic, but also about the rich collaborations and partnerships that have come from this. For example, with VicPol and with agencies like Salvos and Launch Housing. The demise of iconic institutions like the Hopetown Tea Rooms, the collaboration with Docklands Hospitality Trade, and how quickly they turned to online with the help of the Docklands Chamber of Commerce. Or North Melbourne's fashion designer, Jason Gresh, quickly pivoting from high-end fashion, to producing masks. All of that has helped shape our future for our city for future generations. And so I think thought needs to be given to a whole range of things that can be incorporated. So it is the display of this resilience and fortitude from a panoply of endeavouring pursuits, from arts to hospitality and the community services to the nurses who from South Australia have landed on our doorstep to help our elderly and those who are unwell. I think all in all, we need to have a magnifying glass to take in the rich blend of being in this together and ensure we develop an archival piece or several pieces indeed that could eventually serve the purpose of being a resources kit perhaps for high school students, showing the tapestry of social, health and economic impacts and responses in our city during the toughest times that this generation will have ever experienced. So well done, Councillor Riley. It will be brilliant.
Thanks, Councillor Pinder. Any other speakers to this motion? I'm going to put the motion, Councillor Oak, or you're anticipating me?
No, I just wanted to
speak.
I'd like to support the resolution, the notice of motion, and I guess note that there'll be countless others writing about what Melbourne has done. I think it's an excellent idea that we capture it and print it from our perspective as well.
Good, thank you. Councillor Riley, would you like to respond? As mover?
No. Oh, can you hear me?
Yes.
No, thank you for your kind comments, and it is about our future. And I believe that we all have worked very hard this year to maintain our sanity and get through so many crises and dilemmas. And I think in time it will be looked back on the history of our city with great admiration. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor Riley. Will all those in favour of the motion please raise your hand? It's unanimous. Councillor Louis.
We've lost Councillor
Louis, can you hear us? All those in favour? Thank you. It's unanimous, so we declare the motion carried. Thank you. That is the end of general business for consideration in open session this evening. Councillors, are there any items of general business, urgent business that you would like to raise at this time? No? Then I am Hoping that we've still got Chris Thrum. He was there a moment ago. I was having a look because it's time for public questions, which comes at the start and at the end. Beck, are you able to tell us if Chris was able to hang on?
Can you hear us, Chris? Chris?
I could see him on the screen earlier, but, oh, I can see him there. Chris?
I can see that he's connected, Lord Mayor. It's possible that he's put his phone down and has moved away from it. Chris, are you there?
Chris Thrum, we always appreciate Chris's participation in our meetings. But Chris, we will we can hold a time for you next time if you want to go ahead and ask your question in our next meeting. I'll just do one more call out to Chris Thrum, who had registered to ask a question and we couldn't get him earlier. But if that's the Chris, no, gone on to mute. All right, well, everybody, thank you so much. We did have a couple of little hiccups here and there, but I think we would agree that this, our first virtual council meeting, has run relatively smoothly. Thanks to everyone for their cooperation, to the team who made it happen, to the public who participated, watched and listened in, to our executive team who prepared and participated, and councillors, thank you very much. We look forward to seeing you same virtual time, same virtual place next week, and it is now 7:33 p.m. and we are closing the meeting. Thank you.